All life seemed to have lost its quality of action and changed into an infinite sea of hibernation. Mies was a hidden entity whose burrowing work produced nothing and did not make itself known. He had barricaded himself. Neither Torin nor Beta could see him. Only Magnifico's go-between characteristics were evidence of his existence. Magnifico, grown silent and thoughtful, with his tiptoed trays of food and his still, watchful witness in the gloom. Beta was more and more a creature of herself. The vivacity died. The self-assured competence wavered. She, too, sought her own worried, absorbed company, and once Torin had come upon her, fingering her blaster. She had put it away quickly, forced to smile. "What are you doing with it, Bay?" "Holding it? Is that a crime? You'll blow your fool head off." "Then I'll blow it off. Small loss." Married life had taught Torin the futility of arguing with a female in a dark brown mood. He shrugged and left her. On the last day, Magnifico scampered breathless into their presence. He clutched at them, frightened. "The learned doctor calls for you. He is not well." And he wasn't well. He was in bed, his eyes unnaturally large, unnaturally bright. He was dirty, unrecognizable. "Ebling," cried Beta. "Let me speak," croaked the psychologist, lifting his weight to a thin elbow with an effort. "Let me speak. I am finished. The work I pass on to you. I have kept no notes. The scrap figures I have destroyed. No other must know. All must remain in your minds." "Magnifico," said Beta, with rough directness, "go upstairs." Reluctantly, the clown rose and took a backward step. His sad eyes were on Mies. Mies gestured weakly. "He won't matter. Let him stay. Stay, Magnifico." The clown sat down quickly. Beta gazed at the floor. Slowly, slowly, her lower lip caught in her teeth. Mies said in a hoarse whisper, "I am convinced the Second Foundation can win, if it is not caught prematurely by the mule. It has kept itself secret. The secrecy must be upheld. It has a purpose. You must go there. Your information is vital. May make all the difference. Do you hear me?" Torin cried in near agony. "Yes, yes. Tell us how to get there, Ebling. Where is it?" "I can tell you," said the faint voice. He never did. Beta, face frozen white, lifted her blaster and shot with an echoing clap of noise. From the waist upward, Mies was not, and a ragged hole was in the wall behind. From numb fingers, Beta's blaster dropped to the floor. Chapter 26. End of the Search. There was not a word to be said. The echoes of the blast rolled away into the outer rooms and rumbled downward into a hoarse, dying whisper. Before its death, it had muffled the sharp clamor of Beta's falling blaster, smothered Magnifico's high-pitched cry, drowned out Torin's inarticulate roar. There was a silence of agony. Beta's head was bent into obscurity. A droplet caught the light as it fell. Beta had never wept since her childhood. Torin's muscles almost cracked in their spasm, but he did not relax. He felt as if he would never unclench his teeth again. Magnifico's face was a faded, lifeless mask. Finally, from between teeth still tight, Torin choked out in an unrecognizable voice, "You're a mule's woman, then. He got to you." Beta looked up, and her mouth twisted with a painful merriment. I? A mule's woman? That's ironic. She smiled, a brittle effort, and tossed her hair back. Slowly her voice verged back to the normal, or something near it. It's over, Torin. I can talk now. How much I will survive, I don't know. But I can start talking. Torin's tension had broken of its own weight and faded into a flaccid dullness. Talk about what, Bay? What's there to talk about? About the calamity that's followed us? We've remarked about it before, Tori. Don't you remember? How defeat has always bitten at our heels and never actually managed to nip us? We were on the foundation, and it collapsed while the independent traders still fought. But we got out in time to go to Haven. We were on Haven, and it collapsed while the others still fought. And again we got out in time. We went to Neo-Tranter, and by now it's undoubtedly joined the Mule. Torin listened and shook his head. I don't understand. Tori, such things don't happen in real life. You and I are insignificant people. We don't fall from one vortex of politics into another continuously for the space of a year. Unless we carry the vortex with us. Unless we carry the source of infection with us. Now, do you see? Torin's lips tightened, his glance fixed horribly upon the bloody remnants of what had once been a human, and his eyes sickened. Let's get out of here, Bay. Let's get out into the open. It was cloudy outside. The wind scuttered about them in drab spurts and disordered Beta's hair. Magnifico had crept after them, and now he hovered at the edge of their conversation. Torin said tightly, You killed Ebling Mies because you believed him to be the focus of infection. Something in her eyes struck him. He whispered, He was the mule? He did not, could not, believe the implications of his own words. Beta laughed sharply. Poor Ebling, the mule? Galaxy, no. I couldn't have killed him if he were the mule. He would have detected the emotion accompanying the move and changed it for me to love, devotion, adoration, terror, whatever he pleased. No, I killed Ebling because he was not the mule. I killed him because he knew where the second foundation was, and in 2 seconds would have told the mule the secret. Would have told the mule the secret, Torin repeated stupidly. Told the mule? And then he emitted a sharp cry and turned to stare in horror at the clown, who might have been crouching unconscious there for the apparent understanding he had of what he heard. Not Magnifico, Torin whispered the question. Listen, said Beta. Do you remember what happened on Neo-Trantor? Oh, think for yourself, Tori. But he shook his head and mumbled at her. She went on wearily. A man died on Neo-Trantor. A man died with no one touching him. Isn't that true? Magnifico played on his visi-sonar, and when he was finished, the Crown Prince was dead. Now, isn't that strange? Isn't it queer that a creature afraid of everything, apparently helpless with terror, has the capacity to kill at will? The music and the light effects, said Torin, have a profound emotional effect. Yes, an emotional effect, a pretty big one. Emotional effects happen to be the mule's specialty. That, I suppose, can be considered a coincidence. And a creature who can kill by suggestion is so full of fright. Well, the mule tampered with his mind, supposedly, so that can be explained. But, Torin, I caught a little of that Vizisonar selection that killed the Crown Prince. Just a little. But it was enough to give me that same feeling of despair I had in the Time Vault and on Haven. Torin, I can't mistake that particular feeling. Torin's face was darkening. I felt it, too. I forgot. I never thought. It was then that it first occurred to me. It was just a vague feeling. Intuition, if you like. I had nothing to go on. And then Pritchard told us of the mule and his mutation, and it was clear in a moment. It was the mule who had created the despair in the Time Vault. It was Magnifico who had created the despair on Neo Trantor. It was the same emotion. Therefore, the mule and Magnifico were the same person. Doesn't it work out nicely, Tori? Isn't it just like an axiom in geometry? Things equal to the same thing are equal to each other? She was at the edge of hysteria, but dragged herself back to sobriety by main force. She continued, "The discovery scared me to death. If Magnifico were the mule, he could know my emotions and cure them for his own purposes. I dared not let him know. I avoided him. Luckily, he avoided me also. He was too interested in Ebling Mies. I planned killing Mies before he could talk. I planned it secretly as I could, so secretly I didn't dare tell it to myself. If I could have killed the mule himself. But I couldn't take the chance. He would have noticed, and I would have lost everything." She seemed drained of emotion. Torin said harshly and with finality, "It's impossible. Look at the miserable creature. He, the mule, he doesn't even hear what we're saying." But when his eyes followed his pointing finger, Magnifico was erect and alert, his eyes sharp and darkly bright. His voice was without a trace of an accent. "I hear her, my friend. It is merely that I have been sitting here and brooding on the fact that with all my cleverness and forethought, I could make a mistake and lose so much." Torin stumbled backward as if afraid the clown might touch him or that his breath might contaminate him. Magnifico nodded and answered the unspoken question. "I am the mule." He seemed no longer a grotesque. His pipe-stem limbs, his beak of a nose, lost their humor-compelling qualities. His fear was gone. His bearing was firm. He was in command of the situation with an ease born of usage. He said tolerantly, "Seat yourselves. Go ahead. You might as well sprawl out and make yourselves comfortable. The game's over, and I'd like to tell you a story. It's a weakness of mine. I want people to understand me." And his eyes, as he looked at Beta, were still the old, soft, sad brown ones of Magnifico, the clown. "There is nothing, really, to my childhood," he began, plunging bodily into quick, impatient speech, "that I care to remember. Perhaps you can understand that. My meagerness is glandular. My nose I was born with. It was not possible for me to lead a normal childhood. My mother died before she saw me. I do not know my father. I grew up haphazard, wounded and tortured in mind, full of self-pity and hatred of others. I was known then as a queer child. All avoided me. Most out of dislike, some out of fear. Queer incidents occurred. Well, never mind. Enough happened to enable Captain Pritchard, in his investigation of my childhood, to realize that I was a mutant, which was more than I ever realized until I was in my 20s. Torrin and Beta listened distantly. The wash of his voice broke over them, seated on the ground as they were, unheeded almost. The clown, or the mule, paced before them with little steps, speaking downward to his own folded arms. The whole notion of my unusual power seems to have broken on me so slowly, in such sluggish steps. Even toward the end, I couldn't believe it. To me, men's minds are dials with pointers that indicate the prevailing emotion. It is a poor picture, but how else can I explain it? Slowly I learned that I could reach into those minds and turn the pointer to the spot I wished, that I could nail it there forever. And then it took even longer to realize that others couldn't. But the consciousness of power came, and with it, the desire to make up for the miserable position of my earlier life. Maybe you can understand it. Maybe you can try to understand it. It isn't easy to be a freak. To have a mind and an understanding and be a freak. Laughter and cruelty. To be different. To be an outsider. You've never been through it. Magnifico looked up to the sky and teetered on the balls of his feet and reminisced stonily. But I eventually did learn, and I decided that the galaxy and I could take turns. Come. They had had their innings, and I had been patient about it. For 22 years. My turn. It would be up to the rest of you to take it. And the odds would be fair enough for the galaxy. One of me. Quadrillions of them. He paused to glance at Beta swiftly. But I had a weakness. I was nothing in myself. If I could gain power, it could only be by means of others. Success came to me through middlemen. Always. It was, as Pritchard said, through a pirate, I obtained my first asteroidal base of operations. Through an industrialist, I got my first foothold on a planet. Through a variety of others, ending with the warlord of Kalgan, I won Kalgan itself and got a navy. After that, it was the foundation. And you two come into the story. The foundation, he said softly, was the most difficult task I had met. To beat it, I would have to win over, break down, or render useless an extraordinary proportion of its ruling class. I could have done it from scratch, but a shortcut was possible, and I looked for it. After all, if a strong man can lift 500 pounds, it does not mean that he is eager to do so continuously. My emotional control is not an easy task. I prefer not to use it, where not fully necessary. So I accepted allies in my first attack upon the Foundation. As my clown, I looked for the agent or agents of the Foundation that must inevitably have been sent to Kalgan to investigate my humble self. I know now it was Han Pritchard I was looking for. But by a stroke of fortune, I found you instead. I am a telepath, but not a complete one. And, my lady, you were from the Foundation. I was led astray by that. It was not fatal, for Pritchard joined us afterward, but it was the starting point of an error that was fatal. Torrin stirred for the first time. He spoke in an outraged tone. Hold on now. You mean that when I outfaced that lieutenant on Kalgan with only a stun pistol and rescued you, that you had emotionally controlled me into it? He was spluttering. You mean I've been tampered with all along? A thin smile played on Magnifico's face. Why not? You don't think it's likely? Ask yourself, then. Would you have risked death for a strange, grotesque you had never seen before, if you had been in your right mind? I imagine you were surprised at events in cold afterblood. Yes, said Beta, distantly. He was. It's quite plain. As it was, continued the mule, Torin was in no danger. The lieutenant had his own strict instructions to let us go. So the three of us and Pritcher went to the Foundation. And see how my campaign shaped itself instantly. When Pritcher was court-martialed and we were present, I was busy. The military judges of that trial later commanded their squadrons in the war. They surrendered rather easily, and my navy won the Battle of Horlogor and other lesser affairs. Through Pritcher, I met Dr. Meese, who brought me a Visi sonar, entirely of his own accord, and simplified my task immensely. Only it wasn't entirely of his own accord. Beta interrupted. Those concerts! I've been trying to fit them in. Now I see. Yes, said Magnifico. The Visi sonar acts as a focusing device. In a way, it is a primitive device for emotional control in itself. With it, I can handle people in quantity and single people more intensively. The concerts I gave on Terminus before it fell, and Haven before it fell, contributed to the general defeatism. I might have made the Crown Prince of Neo Trantor very sick without the Visi sonar, but I could not have killed him. You see... But it was Ebling Meese who was my most important find. He might have been. Magnifico said it with chagrin, then hurried on. There is a special facet to emotional control you do not know about. Intuition or insight or hunch, tendency, whatever you wish to call it, can be treated as an emotion. At least I can treat it so. You don't understand it, do you? He waited for no negative. The human mind works at low efficiency. 20% is the figure usually given. When momentarily there is a flash of greater power, it is termed a hunch, or insight, or intuition. I found early that I could induce a continual use of high brain efficiency. It is a killing process for the person affected, but it is useful. The nuclear field depressor which I used in the war against the Foundation was the result of high-pressuring a Kalgan technician. Again, I work through others. Ebling Meese was the bullseye. His potentialities were high, and I needed him. Even before my war with the Foundation had opened, I had already sent delegates to negotiate with the Empire. It was at that time I began my search for the second Foundation. Naturally, I didn't find it. Naturally, I knew that I must find it. And Ebling Meese was the answer. With his mind at high efficiency, he might possibly have duplicated the work of Harry Seldon. Partly, he did. I drove him to the utter limit. The process was ruthless, but had to be completed. He was dying at the end, but he lived. Again, his chagrin interrupted him. He would have lived long enough. Together, we three could have gone onward to the second Foundation. It would have been the last battle. From my mistake. Torin stirred his voice to hardness. Why do you stretch it out so? What was your mistake, and have done with your speech? Why, Your wife was the mistake. Your wife was an unusual person. I had never met her like before in my life. Quite suddenly, Magnifico's voice broke. He recovered with difficulty. There was a grimness about him as he continued. She liked me without my having to juggle her emotions. She was neither repelled by me nor amused by me. She liked me. Don't you understand? Can't you see what that would mean to me? Never before had anyone... Well, I cherished that. My own emotions played me false, though I was master of all others. I stayed out of her mind, you see. I did not tamper with it. I cherished the natural feeling too greatly. It was my mistake. The first. You, Torin, were under control. You never suspected me, never questioned me, never saw anything peculiar or strange about me. As, for instance, when the Felian ship stopped us. They knew our location, by the way, because I was in communication with them, as I've remained in communication with my generals at all times. When they stopped us, I was taken aboard to adjust Han Pritcher, who was on it as a prisoner. When I left, he was a colonel, a mule's man, and in command. The whole procedure was too open, even for you, Torin. Yet you accepted my explanation of the matter, which was full of fallacies. See what I mean? Torin grimaced and challenged him. How did you retain communications with your generals? There was no difficulty to it. Hyperwave transmitters are easy to handle and eminently portable. Nor could I be detected in a real sense. Anyone who did catch me in the act would leave me with a slice gapped out of his memory. It happened, on occasion. On Neo Trantor, my own foolish emotions betrayed me again. Beta was not under my control. But even so might never have suspected me if I had kept my head about the Crown Prince. His intentions toward Beta annoyed me. I killed him. It was a foolish gesture. An unobtrusive flight would have served as well. And still your suspicions would not have been certainties if I had stopped Pritcher in his well-intentioned babbling, or paid less attention to Mies and more to you. He shrugged. That's the end of it? Asked Beta. That's the end. What now, then? I'll continue with my program. That I'll find another as adequately brained and trained as Ebling Mies in these degenerate days, I doubt. I shall have to search for the second foundation otherwise. In a sense, you have defeated me. And now Beta was upon her feet, triumphant. In a sense? Only in a sense? We have defeated you entirely. All your victories outside the Foundation count for nothing, since the galaxy is a barbarian vacuum now. The Foundation itself is only a minor victory, since it wasn't meant to stop your variety of crisis. It's the second Foundation you must beat. The second Foundation. And it's the second Foundation that will defeat you. Your only chance was to locate it and strike it before it was prepared. You won't do that now. Every minute from now on, they will be readier for you. At this moment, the machinery may have started. You'll know. When it strikes you, and your short term of power will be over, and you'll be just another strutting conqueror, flashing quickly and meanly across the bloody face of history. She was breathing hard, nearly gasping in her vehemence. And we've defeated you, Torrin and I. I am satisfied to die. But the mule's sad brown eyes were the sad, brown, loving eyes of Magnifico. I won't kill you or your husband. It is, after all, impossible for you two to hurt me further. And killing you won't bring back Ebling Mies. My mistakes were my own, and I take responsibility for them. Your husband and yourself may leave. Go in peace, for the sake of what I call friendship. Then, with a sudden touch of pride, and meanwhile I am still the mule, the most powerful man in the galaxy. I shall still defeat the Second Foundation. And Beta shot her last arrow with a firm, calm certitude. You won't. I have faith in the wisdom of Selden yet. You shall be the last ruler of your dynasty as well as the first. Something caught Magnifico. Of my dynasty? Yes. I had thought of that often, that I might establish a dynasty, that I might have a suitable consort. Beta suddenly caught the meaning of the look in his eyes and froze horribly. Magnifico shook his head. I sense your revulsion, but that's silly. If things were otherwise, I could make you happy very easily. It would be an artificial ecstasy, but there would be no difference between it and the genuine emotion. But things are not otherwise. I call myself the Mule, but not because of my strength, obviously. He left them, never looking back. About the author. Isaac Asimov began his Foundation series at the age of 21, not realizing that it would one day be considered a cornerstone of science fiction. During his legendary career, Asimov penned over 470 books on subjects ranging from science to Shakespeare to history, though he was most loved for his award-winning science fiction sagas, which include the Robot, Empire, and Foundation series. Named a Grand Master of Science Fiction by the Science Fiction Writers of America, Asimov entertained and educated readers of all ages for close to 5 decades. He died at the age of 72 in April 1992. This concludes the reading of Foundation and Empire by Isaac Asimov. Copyright 1952 by Isaac Asimov. This full-length reading was published by arrangement with Doubleday & Company, Incorporated, and was produced in 2003 by Books on Tape, Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. This book was read by Scott Brick.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.